the helper of the helpless. You remember till 1943, in the old hall, there used to be a door on the southern side, opposite to where Bhagavan used to sit on the sofa, and a window in the southern wall, which is now converted into a door. The window, southern wall. So they had two doors on the southern side. So it looks out like there. It had a window that was converted. You know, they said it. There used to be on the southern side, opposite to where Bhagavan used to sit on the sofa, there used to be a door and a window in the southern wall, which is now converted into the door, into a door. Hmm. So it sounds like two doors.
Well, there's certainly only one door
the
now.
The second window, the window at the back used to be a door.
No, but they're saying there's two doors.
On the southern,
on the southern
wall.
Side.
Yeah, so that used to be a door.
One of the windows converted into a door.
Yeah, I know, but I never saw a picture with two doors. On the southern side, one door, you know, on the step, little step going up. Yeah. Devotees used to enter by the southern door, have darshan of Bhagavan, who is the incarnation of Dakshinamurti, and go out by the northern door. Okay. Some ladies used to sit on the southern side, opposite to Bhagavan. As time passed, the number of visitors increased. Ladies with their children began sitting there. The children naturally began to create some nuisance. Besides that, from 1943 onwards, the number of visitors of all types increased still more. Moreover, some poor ladies were coming with their children to prostrate, and the children were urinating there.
What?
I remember, you know, children in India are sometimes very free, right? With their parents, they get free. They walk around, you know, naked, everything. I remember that one friend I was picking up, playing with one, and he peed on me. And he's laughing at me. He's laughing at me.
Laughing.
Blessings. Everybody else, they all, you know, the parents laughed also.
Blessings.
The parents laugh also.
What is wrong with Indian people?
It is funny, you know. Okay. The mothers do not get even a cloth to wipe it out. And even if a cloth was given, some of the modern ladies would not take the trouble to clean the place. Therefore, Bhagavan's attendants had to clean it up. They were tired and vexed at this and thought of preventing such uncivilized people from coming into the hall. Bhagavan, however, would not under any circumstances agree to it. Hence, they began thinking of preventing ladies from sitting in the hall and making arrangements for their sitting on the veranda only, whether they were mothers or not, or had children. You know, some blanket policy against women. I came to know of it indirectly and was very much grieved. I told them, just because one or two people behave in an uncivilized manner, why do you intend to penalize all ladies by preventing them from sitting inside? We trusted Bhagavan and have come here from a long distance. Please do not penalize all of us. I will clean that place whenever necessary. From that time, I began looking after that work. Even so, they were not satisfied. At last, one day, they went to Bhagavan and told him that they would make seating arrangements for ladies outside. Bhagavan thereupon asked why men should sit in the hall if women could not sit there. The attendants stated the difficulties they were experiencing in looking after the ladies that come and go. Bhagavan said, what work is there in the hall even for Bhagavan? It will be all right if he sits under the almond tree, which is opposite. There will then be no trouble or worry for anybody, whatever the children may do. When he said that, they gave up all their attempts to isolate the ladies. Instead, the window on one side was replaced by the door on the other side, and vice versa. After that, the ladies got their seating place opposite to Bhagavan's feet. A similar incident happened in 1946 when I was appointed as a volunteer for ladies during the Brahmotsavam. I have already written to you that Bhagavan changed his seat to the Golden Jubilee Hall immediately it was ready. That is, on the third day of the festival. He did not, therefore, come back to the hall even during the rest period in the afternoons. There was not even a curtain around the sofa. Only a rope was tied to prevent people from the villages crowding around him in the afternoons. The people used to wander about the town, and so when they came to Bhagavan's presence, very much tired, some used to squat on the floors with legs outstretched. Some used to discuss their affairs in loud voices, and some used to lie down and snore. That used to happen between 12 noon and 2 p.m. Mothers used to sleep while breastfeeding the children, and the other children used to wander and play about everywhere. When attempts were made to send such people away, it seems Bhagavan said, "Poor people, they must have wandered about a good deal. They are now taking some rest. How could you drive them away? Let them stay on." I went there soon after 2 p.m. By that time, those people were leaving. Krishna Swami and others had to clean the places themselves. Unable to put up with that nuisance any longer, Krishna Swami was requesting Bhagavan to sit in the hall only. Bhagavan did not agree. Krishna Swami, he told us, "I was a hall sarvadhikari."
Oh, that's yeah.
Why I was in charge of the hall. Krishna Swami said, "Who will tidy up the nuisance committed by the children?" Bhagavan, "It should be all right if their mothers are asked to clean it up themselves and are requested to be careful thereafter." Krishna Swami, "Who was there to tell all that? If it were the Congress, they have women volunteers for looking after the woman visitors." Bhagavan, looking at me with a smile, "There she is. We have a volunteer. Why do you say we have none?" I, understanding Bhagavan's instructions, said, "Will they care to listen to me?" Bhagavan coolly, "Why not? Outsiders will certainly carry out your instructions." I said, "Then it is all right. I shall certainly tell them." Bhagavan, "Poor people, they come here only to see Swami, and they get all the required conveniences here." In accordance with Bhagavan's orders, I looked after the work from that day. That arrangement was found very convenient. And so the office people considered the matter and confirmed me in that work. Bhagavan wanted to give darshan to poor people in that way during those 10 days, and he sat there too, with kind solicitude for them. I therefore felt that I should also do that much of service to them. You know, during the time of the Jayanti and Mahapuja and other celebrations, Bhagavan does not get up from his meals unless and until the feeding of the poor starts and is half finished. It seems in the past, during such festival occasions, Bhagavan did not take his food except with the last batch. It is only recently, on representations made by devotees, that Bhagavan has been taking food after the feeding of the poor was halfway through. Daily before the time for the midday meal and before striking the gong, rice was mixed with all the other preparations, made into balls, and was sent out for distribution to the poor. That custom prevailed for a long time. Within recent times, however, it so happened that the distribution was done either while meals were being taken or soon after that. One day, Bhagavan saw a poor man struggling under a tree as he could not get his share of the food. Next day, when the gong was struck, Bhagavan got up and went to the tree where the poor people had gathered, stood there and said, "If you do not give them food first, I will not come to the dining hall at all. I will stand under the tree along with these people, stretch out my hand for food like them. And when I am given a ball of food, I will eat it. Go straight to the hall and sit there." From that day onwards, it is only after food is sent to the poor, they strike the gong in the dining hall. That gong, you have seen it?
Yeah.
It's a piece of railway type. And it's like, it's being, you know, quite deformed in shape from beating it for the last 80 years, you know, at least. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yes.
I hope, you know, they put it in the archive or something when they stop it. Okay. You know what happened one day in February 1947? A poor man came into the hall and stood opposite to Bhagavan's sofa. As Bhagavan was busy writing something, he did not notice him. The attendants asked the poor man to go out. He did not go. "If you do not go away, why not sit?" they said. He did not move. Bhagavan lifted his head and looked at him questioningly. The poor man said with great eagerness, "Swami, I do not want anything. My stomach is burning with hunger. Please arrange to give me one handful of rice to satisfy this great hunger." Bhagavan looked at his attendants, indicating his intentions. "For this small thing, should you ask Bhagavan? Come, let us go," said one of the attendants, and took the poor man toward the kitchen. After they left, Bhagavan looked at all those in the hall and said, "Do you see that? As he is a very poor man, he has no desires except one, and that is to fill his stomach with food, as it is burning with hunger. With that, he will be satisfied and will go. He goes and lies down under some tree and sleeps happily. Where do we have that satisfaction that he has? We have any number of desires. If one desire is satisfied, another one comes up. Hence, where is the chance for our desires to be satisfied? Is it not clear from this that in Bhagavan's presence there is a shelter for the weak, the helpless, and the poor at all times?" 3rd June 1949. Residing in the front hall. Bhagavan spent the whole day time in the new hall of the temple on the Mahapuja day and returned to the Golden Jubilee Hall for the night. The work in the new hall has finished a week later. Some devotees felt that the Golden Jubilee Hall would be more comfortable for Bhagavan and pointed this out to the office people. The Sanradi Kari, however, desired that Bhagavan should be seated only in the front hall of the temple. So he approached Bhagavan one morning with his attendants and told him that on Jeshta Suddha Panchami, the fifth day of the lunar month of Jeshta, that is on Wednesday, 1st of June 1949 at 10 a.m., he would make all the arrangements for Bhagavan to sit on the Yogasana couch in the new hall, and would Bhagavan be pleased to occupy that seat. You know, they're not going to go through all that trouble to build that big new hall and all that and have him sit in the thatched
patch.
Which he would probably prefer. Bhagavan, in his usual disinterested manner, said, "What have I to say in the matter? I will sit wherever all of you want me to sit. That is why we have all come here, to beg of you to come to the new hall, they said. Bhagavan nodded his head in assent. On the morning of the first instant, decorative designs of lime powder were drawn on the floor around the front hall, and strings of green leaves were tied in a row to the doors and windows. On the yogasana, a mattress of silk cotton with a covering of satin cloth was spread, and at the back, a broad pillow was laid. A silk bed sheet covered the mattress. It was also prettily decorated. Abhishekam and other pujas were being performed in the temple. The bells were ringing. Arati with camphor was being waved. At 9:45 a.m., Bhagavan, who was returning from the Goshala, was led with Purnakalasa, vessels full of water, and with Brahmins chanting the Vedas, to the front hall, and was requested to sit on the yogasana. After the recital of Nakarmana and other mantras and the waving of camphor lights, and after all the devotees had prostrated before him, Bhagavan sat on the couch arranged for him. I sat in the hall reflecting on the whole scene as follows. Vidyaranya began the building of a city in the shape of a chakra, but did not succeed. He had, however, written about it, saying that in the future some emperor would do it. Ganapati Muni had that in mind, and so wrote in Arunachala Ashtakam, 8 verses in praise of Arunachala, beginning with Sri Chakra Kriti Shona Shela Vapushham. In accordance with that sentence, he said, this hill itself is in the shape of a chakra. So, this is the place meant by Vidyaranya. Bhagavan is the emperor, and the only thing that remains is to build houses around. So saying, he drew up plans for the proposed kingdom, but disappointed us ultimately as he passed away before the plans could be executed. The Sarvadhikari, however, built a temple over the samadhi of his mother, made the front hall the chief place of the empire, constructed a stone seat like the throne of Vikramarka for Bhagavan to sit on, all according to Ganapati Muni's great dreams. His desires have been fulfilled. And the emperor amongst yogis, Sri Bhagavan, is seated there like the real Sadashiva. When Bhagavan's brother wanted to build the mother's temple and asked Bhagavan about it, he told him, go talk with Ganapati Muni. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about it.
Just have a tea.
While I was thus absorbed in my own thoughts, the stapati and others came with a plate containing fruits. You know, Ashok interviewed Jim.
Yeah.
I said, he's the stapati of the ashram.
Yeah, this ashram, yes.
So Jim explained how he designed the construction and how it's related to things at the Ramanashram. The pillars are like the pillars on the veranda, but in wood rather than stone.
Jim trained with stapati in India.
The son of this stapati.
He was a renowned temple architect.
Well, I was thus absorbed in my own thoughts. The stapati and others came with a plate containing fruits, flowers, and other auspicious articles and got them touched by Bhagavan. They then went out through the southern doorway. I did not understand what it was all about. Bhagavan was looking with steadfastness in that direction. With the desire to know what it was about, I went out and saw opposite the doorway and in the open courtyard a huge stone. They smeared on it turmeric powder and kumkum, placed on it a flower garden, broke some coconuts on it, lit some camphor, and began chiseling it. Then I asked somebody what it is. I was told that it was for making a statue of Bhagavan. That's this one here. This is a replica of the statue they started making. My heart throbbed with misgivings. They had already done a mock one in chalk. You know, it's easy to carve chalk. And usually they practice. This is how they do it. You know, they do a practice one first. And the chalk one, they finish the whole thing, and they didn't feel like breaking it up, so they buried it. So next to Kal Lakshmi Samadhi, on the right of that, if you're facing it, you'll see a flat stone, maybe about 2 feet by 2 feet, or maybe 3 feet by 3 feet, a slab. Under that is a chalk replica of this. So they gave it Samadhi. You know. My heart throbbed with misgivings. You may ask why. I felt disturbed because it is known to us all that Bhagavan is sick. Under these circumstances, I began to wonder why a statue was being thought of. Comforting myself with several explanations, I came to Bhagavan's presence and sat down. Bhagavan noticed all my misgivings and my troubled mind. In the meantime, the function relating to the statue was over, and they all came in. The bell in the dining hall rang, and all dispersed. But somehow, my mind continued to be troubled. When I entered in the afternoon at 3 p.m., Bhagavan told us some stories that made us forget the matter. I will write about all those things in another letter. See, although he sat for the statue and they measured with instruments the length of his fingers and hands and arms and ears and head, but they depict him from another famous picture, a younger Ramana Maharshi, younger Bhagavan. The one you see in the Madurai, you know, across, you know, what you see there. That's a photograph. That's exactly from a photograph. I can show you the photograph, you know. But they measured everything. They even had him sit for it and all that. You know, that's a good idea, you know. I mean, who wants to put an old man, you know, statue out there? Everybody would like to be depicted in a younger, more robust condition.
That's the gold one in the...
The gold one's different. That was 1980.
Yeah, that is.
And that was some sculptor there. So he just did it from the photo, you know, the photograph of Bhagavan Singh. That was later. But I think this one's much more accurate. You can see it's much more well done than the other one. You can see the blood veins and everything.
Yeah.
And it's and proportionally, it's all correct, everything. There was some famous sculptor, he did that, some devotee. I met him a couple times. 3rd June 1949. So when Indira Gandhi came, they unveiled that statue.
That was before the 84 inauguration.
That was Bhagavan's, you know, 100th anniversary, for example. The happiness of an independent life, 3rd June 1949. Revolving in my mind the details relating to the function held this morning for the consecration of a statue, I went to the ashram this afternoon before 3 p.m. As Bhagavan had gone out, I was standing in the hall awaiting his return. The silk cotton mattress that was spread on the couch was slippery because it was new. Though it was thick and firmly stitched, as a big pillow was placed on one side for Bhagavan to keep his arms, another behind to lean against, and a third one at the feet. The actual seating space got considerably reduced. As I was wondering how Bhagavan would be able to sit there, he came in, sitting on the mattress and pressing it with his hand. He said, looking at his attendants, See how this mattress slips from one side to another. It's KK number you brought it, you know, on top of his car, tied it up. Had it made. People think that will be comfortable for Bhagavan if there is a costly mattress. It is, however, not possible to sit on this restfully. Why this? It will be much more comfortable if I sit on the stone seat itself. Truly, I do not find even the slightest happiness on these mattresses and pillows, compared with the happiness I had when I was sitting or sleeping on the raised platform which I myself constructed of stone and mud in Virupaksha Cave. As was told in the story about the sadhu, people think that Swami is undergoing great hardship when he lives in a thatched shed and lies on a stone bench, and so they make a fuss. I do not find the slightest happiness on these mattresses and pillows. It will perhaps be better if, like that sadhu in the story, I gather some stones similar to those I had in the Virupaksha cave, take them to whichever place I go and spread them on a mattress like this. At that place, it was a stone platform in the Jubilee Hall, and even here, it is a stone couch. The only obstacle between me and this couch is this mattress. But one thing, the pillow under the feet, the pillow on the side, and the broad pillow at the back, all the three are almost as hard as stones. So this is almost like the story of the sadhu. Without bringing stones from elsewhere, my bed of stones is already here. The devotee said, what is that story of the sadhu, which Bhagavan has now mentioned? Whereupon Bhagavan related the following story. A great Mahatma was living as a sadhu under a tree in a forest. He always used to keep with him three stones. While sleeping, he used to keep one of them under the head, another under the waist, and the third under the legs, and cover himself with a sheet. When it rained, the body used to be on the stones, and so the water would flow underneath. And the water that fell on the sheet too would flow down. So there was no disturbance to his sleep. He used to sleep soundly. When sitting, he used to keep the three stones together like a hearth and sit upon them comfortably. Hence, snakes and other reptiles did not trouble him, nor did he trouble them, for they used to crawl through the slits under the stones. Somebody used to bring him food, and he would eat it. And so there was nothing for him to worry about. A king who came to that forest for hunting saw this sadhu and felt, what a pity. How much must be his suffering by having to adjust his body suitably to those stones and sleep thereon. I must take him home and keep him with me at least for 1 or 2 days and make him feel comfortable. So thinking, he went home and sent two of his soldiers with a palanquin and its bearers, with instructions to invite that sadhu respectfully and bring him to the palace. He also said that if they do not succeed in bringing the sadhu, they would be punished. They came and saw the sadhu and told him that the king had ordered them to bring him to the palace and that he should come. When he showed this inclination to go with them, they said that they would be punished if they returned without him. So they begged him to come, if only to save them from trouble. As he did not want them to get into trouble on his account, he agreed to go with them. What was there for him to pack up? A kopinam, a sheet, and those three stones. He folded and kept the kopinam, and the sheet, kept those three stones also in the sheet, and tied them together. What is this? The Swami is bringing with him some stones when he's going to the Raja's palace? Is he mad or what? Thought those soldiers. Anyway, he got into the palanquin with his bundle and came to the king. The Raja saw that bundle, thought it contained some personal effects, took him into the palace with due respect, feasted him properly, arranged a tape cot with a mattress of silk cotton to sleep upon. The sadhu opened his bundle, took out the three stones, spread them on the bed, covered himself with the sheet, and slept as usual. The next morning the king came, bowed to him with respect, and asked, Swami, is it comfortable for you here? Swami, oh yes. What is there wanting here? I'm always happy. King, that is not it, Swami. You were experiencing hardships in the forest by having to sleep on those stones. Here, this bed and this house must be giving you happiness. That is why I'm asking. Oh, Swami said, the bed that was there is here also. The bed that is here is there also. So I have the same happiness everywhere. There is nothing wanting at any time, either in regard to my sleep or to my happiness. The king was puzzled and looked at the cot. He saw that the three stones were on it. Thereupon the king immediately prostrated before the sadhu and said, Oh, holy man, without knowing your greatness, I brought you here with the intention of making you happy. I did not know that you are always in a state of happiness, and so I behaved in this foolish manner. Please excuse me and bless me. After making up for his mistake in this way, he allowed the sadhu to go his way. This is the story of the sadhu. So, in the eyes of Mahatmas, that free life is the real happy life, said the devotee. What else? Life in big buildings like this is a prison life. Only I may be an A-class prisoner. When I sit on mattress like these, I feel that I'm sitting on prickly pears. Where is peace and comfort? Said Balan. Next day, that mattress was taken away, and the usual mattress was spread on the couch. Even so, several people thought that it might be better to leave Bhagavan to a free life, like that of the sadhu. But Bhagavan had to stay there alone, like a parrot in a cage of the devotees, because the devotees never leave him free. Fan. June 1949. This is going on to all the conveniences they're getting. You know, first the bed, now this is all about the fan thing. A problem for him. June 1949. Yesterday evening, by the time Bhagavan went out and came back, some of the modern civilized devotees switched on all the fans in the new hall. You know, they had the same fans you see at the ceiling. Now they have their, they put in initially. Jagadishwar Swami's father installed all this. Jagadishwar.
Right, he installed all the electrical work and everything from Uttar Pradesh.
Yesterday evening, by the time Bhagavan went out and came back, some of the modern civilized devotees switched on all the fans in the new hall and sat there comfortably awaiting Bhagavan's return. As soon as they came, he looked up and while sitting on the couch asked the attendants as to who had switched on all the fans. Pointing to the people sitting there, they said, this is June, pretty hot in June. Pointing to the people sitting there, they said, they wanted us to do so, and we have done it. I see. What a great thing you have done. If they were feeling so very sultry, would have been sufficient if only those fans where they are sitting had been switched on. Why all this? Asked Bhagavan. They said that it would be very pleasant if all the fans were switched on, said the attendants. Is that so? What an amount of electric power will be consumed by these fans? What a costly bill. Why this expense on our account? Enough, enough, stop that, said Bhagavan. They're asking that they may be kept on until at least the Veda Parayana is over, said Krishna Swami. Oh, is that so? They are rich people, and so in their houses they can sit down with fans whose use may cost 10 times more than this. Why should we have this? Why this show? The hand fan is there, and the hands are there. Stop them all, said Bhagavan. At that, the attendants switched off all the fans except the one above these people. During the early days of my stay here, that is in 1941 and 42, someone brought an electric fan and requested that it be used by Bhagavan. Why this fan? The ordinary fan is there. We have hands. I will fan myself with it whenever necessary. Why do I require all these things? Said Bhagavan. Is it not some trouble? If the electric fan is used, there is no trouble whatsoever, said that devotee. What is the trouble? If the ordinary fan is used, we get just as much breeze as we want. The electric fan blows too much breeze and with a whizzing noise. Moreover, some electric current is consumed. For that, there will be a bill. Why should we make the office bear that expense on our account? Said Bhagavan. We have got it here, Swami, with the permission of the office, said the devotee. Oh, is that so? Then let them have the fan for themselves. They are people who work, and it is necessary for them. Should I need it? Said Bhagavan. The devotee did not say anything further, but went away, leaving the fan there. As it was a table fan, it was kept near Bhagavan's sofa, and it used to be switched on by someone nearby whenever it was sultry. Bhagavan would immediately say, it is only because of such things I had said you should not keep it here at all. If you want a fan, you can keep it near yourself. And if nobody stopped it, he used to stop it himself with the aid of a small stick. When Bhagavan would not agree to the use of even one fan, would he consent to the use of many fans? Not only that, he will not allow anyone to fan him, even with an ordinary fan. If anyone does so, he will say that if it is so sultry, he too should serve the devotee by fanning him. Last May, when the radium needles were applied to Bhagavan's hands, and Venkataratnam and other attendants were fanning him, Bhagavan admonished them a number of times. Desirelessness, 15, 1949. I wrote to you in my letters of yesterday and said, and the day before, about the disinclination of Bhagavan to use satin-covered mattresses, pillows, fans, and the like. You know, in September 1946, the Golden Jubilee of Bhagavan Advent at Arunachala was celebrated about a month before those celebrations. The Maharani of Baroda sent a parcel post of velvet shawl embroidered with silk and gold thread. The office people sent it to Bhagavan through Rajagopala Iyer, one of the office attendants. He showed it to Bhagavan and wanted to spread it on the sofa, but Bhagavan would not permit him to do so. When the devotee tried to place it under Bhagavan's feet, Bhagavan withdrew his feet and sat with folded legs. Thereupon the devotee placed it over the pillow at which Bhagavan reclined. Immediately thereafter, Bhagavan stopped leaning on it. You should be getting the message, right? Moved to the middle of the sofa and sat in Padmasana pose without uttering a single word. The devotee felt it was no use trying further. And so he folded the shawl took it back to the office. After he left, Bhagavan sat as usual and said, "These are meant for those who wear shirts, coats, turbans, and appear in style. But why do I require all these? If I have to sit on them, I feel like sitting on prickly pears. According to the old saying, I have a bare body and a bald head. Of what use are these to me? This towel itself is my silk shawl and my lace upper cloth. In some places, such things are being used. That is why perhaps they have sent it," said a devotee. "It may be so, but what status have I to use them? I am a poor man. For my status, even what I now have is too much. This sofa, these mattresses, these pillows, why all these? You people do not agree. But how happy it would be if I could spread out this towel and sit on the floor," said Bhagavan. "You say even that towel should be of no bigger than the present one," said Mudaliar. "Yes, why a bigger one? It is half yard broad and 3/4 yard long. It is sufficient for drying the body after bath, for spreading over the head if you walk in the sun, for tying around the neck if it is cold, and for spreading on the floor to sit on. What more could we do with a bigger one?" said Bhagavan. "Some rich people bring silver tumblers and plates and request Bhagavan to use them. Bhagavan would not even touch them, but would send them back to the office if received through them, or give them back to the people if they are brought direct to him. Knowing that such articles would not be accepted, Janaki Amal, the wife of Dr. Ganapati Iyer, sent through a devotee for Bhagavan, used wooden sandals with silver fittings. Bhagavan touched them and, seeing the silver fittings, remarked, "They are rich people. Sandals with silver fittings are therefore suitable for them, but not for us. So send them back to those people. Tell them Swami has touched them and that is enough. We have feet given to us by God. Why these ornaments? Give back to them their articles." So saying, he sent them back. Let alone the question of wearing sandals with silver fittings, he does not wear even ordinary wooden sandals. Even in the height of summer, when his feet get scorched by heat, he walks barefoot and refuses to use anything to protect the feet. Some time back, when the path leading to the Goshala from the office was cemented and Bhagavan was walking on it in the hot sun, some devotees who could not see him suffering thus poured water along the path. But Bhagavan stopped them, saying, "Why are you wasting so much water for my sake and pouring it over the ground? If you open a shed for supplying drinking water to travelers, how much more useful it will be. Why do two or three people waste their time and water for my sake? Please don't do it." It was therefore stopped, and instead the whole passage was covered with a bundle. Bhagavan used to say the same thing. Even if kush tati screens were hung and water sprinkled on them, for a great tyagi and mahapurusha like this, will there be any desire for silver sandals, satin cloth, mattress, silk-covered pillows, and other ornamental things? Why these luxuries which curtail freedom? Vairagya is his ornament. Shiva Bhuti, his glory.